Downtown Raleigh businesses were hit hard by the pandemic. Now, to help some regain those losses, visitors may notice a slight change.
You guys want to open up a tab?
No, we'll just take it.
In August, Raleigh launched Sip and Stroll, a pilot program for a social drinking district. It allows visitors to carry and consume alcohol as they walk around parts of Fayetteville Street and the Warehouse District. Hannah Caminetti, a registered nurse, learned about the program when she ordered a beer at Crank Arm Brewing Company.
But if you're like meeting other people who are also participating, it'll be a good way to meet up with new people and see what they're up to.
Adam Eckhart, the owner of Crank Arm Brewing Company, held a kickoff event for the district. He says so far, it's been good for business.
Coming in the next day and the staff was like, whoa, people are really into this, you know, the ability to responsibly drink an adult beverage and walk down the street and sort of view the city and go from place to place.
During the pandemic, Eckhart's business struggled like many, but with the new district.
The first week, I can say we were up 20%.
Raleigh leaders say they wanted to motivate people to return to areas where business was still sluggish. Raleigh City Council member Jonathan Melton pushed to create the social drinking district.
You know, we're not trying to be like New Orleans or Las Vegas, but there are places where you can have this sort of social atmosphere. And the idea of being able to bring a piece of that to Raleigh while also helping with the economic recovery, I thought that was a unique opportunity.
Raleigh Social District isn't the only one in North Carolina. Durham and Fayetteville are also now allowing drinking on certain streets. And as for Chapel Hill, Mayor Pam Hemmer says the town council is considering it. But Chapel Hill faces special challenges due to UNC's proximity to downtown. College students are typically in the age range with the highest levels of binge drinking, according to UNC behavioral scientist Melissa Cox.
Anytime we increase access and availability to alcohol, we're increasing risk for harm.
Cox researches alcohol misuse among young adults and says she worries a social district could lead to more underage drinking, drunk driving, and even increased aggression and violence.
The decisions around implementing social drinking districts have largely been economic in nature. And they may very well have, you know, reasonable goals and reasons, but we have a public health implications as well.
Back in Raleigh, one customer, Tony Childs, expressed similar concerns, even as he sat on a bench on Harrogate Street with a drink in his hand.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm an alcoholic. So it makes it easier for people to drive from other locations and come down here, get bombed, and then have to drive home.
For now, Raleigh's district is a pilot program, so the city council is looking at what does and doesn't work. The days, the times, the district's boundaries, and they're keeping a special eye on how this impacts substance abuse. Towns like Chapel Hill will use Raleigh's findings to shape their decisions. But to fully consider it, Crank Arm owner Adam Eckhart says people should experience it for themselves.
This isn't a carte blanche for people to act the fool. It's a way for folks that want to be responsible and be outside and walk from place to place with a drink to do so.
The Raleigh Police Department says that since the district's launch, there have been no significant increases in alcohol-related offenses. But Cox says it could take more than a year before there's enough data to even begin understanding the effects districts could have on public health. In downtown Raleigh, I'm Sophie Mallinson.
Hey, Jane, I see you. Hello.
Jane has dedicated her life to renewable energy.
Oh, she was loud as a baby. Come here, Jane.
She works long hours at this solar farm in Roxboro, rain or shine.
She can be quite a handful at times.
Jane is a sheep. And she's one of many that farmers like Johnny Rogers have raised for what's called solar grazing, using pasture animals to keep the grass short at solar farms. North Carolina now has more than 600 solar farms, large plots of land with long rows of glass panels. The sheep reduce the need for lawnmowers.
Anytime you mow, you're using time, labor, fossil fuel. So we're trying to maybe have a more regenerative approach with the grazing than just mowing alone would be.
North Carolina is among the top 10 states for the growth of solar power, so solar grazing is growing too. Putting sheep on solar farms preserves an agricultural use for the land. Rogers says that's important in rural communities where solar farms often replace conventional farms.
Early on, there was a little bit of a clash between agriculture and the solar industry because it's land use, right? So there is this kind of, you know, there's a rub there.
Rogers raises other livestock too, but he says cattle are too big to graze around solar panels and goats' climbing ambitions disqualify them, making the mild-mannered sheep the most popular choice for solar grazing. And with that popularity comes an opportunity. The number of sheep and shepherds in the U.S. has been declining for decades. But now, solar grazing is sparking new interest.
Okay. So I'll demonstrate in this group.
In a small barn on NC State University's educational farm, Professor Andrew Weaver is training students in shepherding.
It's science and art. It's the combination of two.
Weaver is developing a curriculum in solar grazing that he says will combine the resources of the solar and shepherding worlds.
Following along with the growth in solar, we need a growth in the sheep industry. And so that's going to take training new farmers. It's going to take helping existing producers learn how to raise more sheep. You know, education is going to be a component that needs to come along with all of this.
One of those newer farmers is Brock Phillips. He's the livestock director for Carolina Solar Services, which has more than 3,000 acres of solar farms and more than 500 sheep. In Orange County, Phillips was tending a flock with a little help from the sheep's guardian donkey, Stella.
She's very sweet, although she's much sweeter to everyone else than me.
Phillips is a modern shepherd. Instead of a crook and cloak, he sports jeans and a baseball cap. He earned degrees to be a chemical engineer, but now...
I was always really interested in energy, and I get to work in ag, and I get to take my dog to work.
Phillips says solar grazing can get more young people like him involved in farming. The cost of buying and operating conventional farms has gone up, so agriculture has become harder to break into. But solar grazing has a different business model. As farmers can keep their sheep on property they don't have to own.
You can actually provide a service and get paid to do it. You can exist on 10 acres as a home farm, but then have access to tens, hundreds, if not thousands of acres of solar farms on which to grow your operation.
And with North Carolina's plentiful sunshine and long growing season, Phillips predicts the state will be a proving ground for the traditional farming industry to play a role in a high-tech, clean energy future. In Orange County, I'm Sophie Mallinson.